All right, you guys, I am currently struggling with a pinched nerve in my neck, and if you have ever had one, you know the pain. So I am feeling super thankful for today's sponsor, Tenassi. Tenassi's CBD CBDA is 2 times better than CBD alone and better than over-the-counter ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and aspirin. It helps soothe and relieve my aches and pains, like my pinched nerve, and it's great for sleep and anxiety, so I put it on right before bed. Tenassi was discovered by a team of chemists and biologists at Middle Tennessee State University, and 5% of all revenue is given back to the university partner for ongoing research. It is THC-free and comes in a range of products. I love the topicals, but you can also choose from soft gels, gummies, and tinctures. Satisfaction is guaranteed. Try Tenassi for 30 days, and if you don't love it, you get a full refund. Go to Tenassi.com and use code MOM to get 25% off at checkout. That's TANASI.com to get 25% off your first order with promo code MOM. Since learning the truth about alcohol over 4 years ago, I've become pretty skeptical about anything that seems too good to be true. You know, like alcohol. If you're like me and you can spot a too good to be true health hack from a mile away, congrats, you're a skeptic too. Ritual knows that every good skeptic deserves a multivitamin that exceeds our standards. I take Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus every morning because it has high quality and traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. It's gentle on an empty stomach and has a minty essence in every bottle that helps make taking my multis actually enjoyable. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/sobermom. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/sobermom for 25% off. Hi, welcome to the Sober Mom Life podcast. I'm your host, Suzanne, of My Kind of Sweet and the Sober Mom Life on Instagram. If you are a mama who has questioned your relationship with alcohol at times, if you're wondering if maybe it's making motherhood harder, this is for you. I will be having candid, honest, funny conversations with other moms who have also thought, maybe motherhood is better without alcohol. Is it possible? We'll chat and we'll talk about all things sobriety and how we've found freedom in sobriety. I don't consider myself an alcoholic. You don't have to either. And maybe life is brighter without alcohol. I hope you will join us on this journey, and I'm so excited to get started. Hi, welcome back to the Sober Mom Life podcast. I'm your host, Suzanne. And if this is your first time listening, welcome. I'm so glad you're here. I hope you stick around. I hope you find out that, you know, we have the most badass women who are examining their relationships with alcohol and really finding freedom from it. And it's pretty damn good over here on this side. I feel like today's episode doesn't need an introduction because you probably all know Annie Grace. You have probably read or listened to This Naked Mind, her first book, also The Alcohol Experiment. You know, Annie Grace has become synonymous with this sober curious and this new sobriety movement. And I am honored that I get to have her on my podcast. And it was a total full circle moment for me. Wow. It's a pinch me moment, you guys. And I'm just so thankful. It's because of you. It's because of you listening. It's because of you sharing the podcast with other moms who might like it. It's because of the reviews and all of your support that I am able to get guests like this. Like, how amazing is this? You guys, do you understand? This is just little me in my little closet. I'm just over here talking to myself most of the time. And then I get amazing guests like Annie Grace come on, and it feels very surreal. But I hope you enjoy this episode. I wanted to talk to Annie not only about her famous book, but also about her story and dive into that just in case maybe you are listening to this for the first time and you're just starting this sobriety journey, I know we need to find a better word. I still have not found a better word than journey. So we're going to stick with journey for now. And maybe you're just starting. Maybe today is the first day that you're opening your eyes to what alcohol is and what it does and what you've lost to it. And I just want to say welcome. And this is a really good place to start. You're in good hands, I will say that. If you do love the podcast, please rate and review it. It really does help. Also, come and follow me on My Kind of Sweet and on the Sober Mom Life. And if you're looking for community and sobriety, come and join the Sober Mom Life Cafe. All of those links and everything are in the show notes. And just in case you don't know, Annie Grace is the founder of This Naked Mind, where millions of people around the globe have found freedom from alcohol through her groundbreaking emotion-based change framework. This Naked Mind offers a grace-led, science-based approach so that whether you want to cut back, moderate, or cut out alcohol completely, you are empowered with the tools to take back control by completely removing your desire to drink. And without further ado, Annie Grace. Annie Grace, welcome to the Sober Mom Life podcast.
It's great to be here.
I have to tell you, this is a pinch me moment for me. I record this podcast in my closet. And 4 years ago, I was in here all the time, weeping on the floor and figuring out all the life stuff. And you were in my ear, and your book, This Naked Mind, changed everything for me. I can't thank you enough for what I think now is giving me permission, I think, to change my relationship with alcohol and to become spontaneously sober, which I didn't even know was a thing. And I can't thank you enough. This is very meaningful for me that you're here. So thank you for all of it.
Oh, I'm so glad. Thank you for letting me know. That's just awesome.
Yeah, of course. I'm sure you hear it all the time. I mean, your book, This Naked Mind, is synonymous now with becoming sober curious and in sobriety. How does it feel? Can you take that in, or is it just a lot?
Well, it's better now. I remember the first time I like got recognized in public by somebody who had read my book. It was the most awkward thing for me. She was like, yeah. Oh, gosh, you saved my life. Thank you so much. And I was like, felt such a need to say something reciprocal. So I was like, I love your lipstick.
That's hilarious. So she's awkward. Like, thanks. You're like, yeah, you saved my life too. What is the color of your lipstick? I need to know.
Right. So, but yes, I'm learning to accept gratitude, which I think is an important thing.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's hard, but it's so, I mean, yeah, you are the one, Annie Grace. Your book is the one that's at the top of the list for our cafe members. I'm like, you guys, I'm interviewing Annie Grace. What questions do you have? And overall, like, it was just tell her thank you. Tell her thank you from us. And so I hope that lands for you, however and wherever, because it's just so true. You know, if anyone's been in this space for like 5 minutes, they know you, they know This Naked Mind. But I always think about the mom who's like just waking up this morning and being like, okay, I'm fine, I'm done. Like, let me just look up Sober Mom on podcasts. And she comes across this episode and she doesn't know the book yet. She hasn't heard your name yet. And so before you get to the book and before you write This Naked Mind, how would you describe your drinking story?
Yeah. So before the book, I was just drinking a lot, and it didn't start drinking a lot. It actually started, I didn't drink very much in sort of college even. And I remember moving to New York City with my husband. He had gotten a job there, and I went out for one of my first days on the job, and I was asked by the colleagues to go out to happy hour. And I was like, okay. And so I went out to happy hour, and I remember ordering my first like big adult drink in the city. I was 25 years old. And again, I just hadn't made alcohol a big part of my life until then. And it was a Cosmopolitan, and it, I remember, cost $25. So I was like, I'm not going to do that again. then a few months later, my boss actually came up to me and he was like, why aren't you coming up to happy hour? And I was like, oh, I don't really drink. And he's like, oh, that's not what it's about. This is like where the deals get done. This is where your ideas get showcased. So I actually had a method, and my method was I was going to drink a glass of wine and then a pint of water and kind of like alternate between the two. And it went so far to me being so paranoid about being like drunk with colleagues that I would go into the bathroom sometimes and I would throw up a glass of wine on purpose just to be able to keep drinking and keep up with like the everybody was twice my age. They were mostly men. And very, very slowly, very insidiously, what was drinks at work and happy hour became drinks at home. And then fast forward a decade, I had two young boys at home. I was global head of marketing for this multinational company. And I was drinking pretty much two bottles of wine every single night.
Yeah. And like you said, insidiously, right? It wasn't the plan and you didn't grow up drinking. It wasn't the college thing. It was like, and that's just how it happens, right? It's not the plan.
No, it's not only not the plan, but you really don't think like it can happen to you. And I think it's one of these constructs that we've created in our society. And I'm actually been writing this week about this in my next book.
Oh, good. Okay, you guys, you heard it. That was a little Easter egg.
You know, how it goes is the writing process is long and then the editing process is long, the publishing process is long, so can't get too excited. But I am actually writing. And one of the things I've been really digging into is this thing that we have in our society where we don't think it can happen to us because we've created this false construct that there are, quote, normal people, and then there are, quote, alcoholics. And if we're not an alcoholic, then we don't have anything to worry about. And
right.
I believed that hook, line, and sinker. I remember, I think it's different now. I mean, This Naked Mind came out, I think it was 8 years ago now, maybe might be working on nine. And so I do think the culture just collectively, we're all just going through an awakening about this.
Yeah.
I think that if I was to walk around New York City where I was living when I was 25 years old, and I would have asked 10 people on the street, is alcohol addictive? They would say no. Or not unless you're an alcoholic. And that might still be true.
It is hard to know, right? Because you and I are on the same algorithm. Like we see all the same things. We're like out of the cult. And so I do feel like I'm like, well, obviously everyone knows this, but I think like out there in the world, I don't think everybody realizes. And if they know it's addictive, maybe it's like, well, yeah, but you know, not like bad. And it's like, no, actually like highly addictive. Like, I don't think they know that.
No, and it's just striking me that I should do this and like, you know, have a little camera crew, you know, TikTok style. Oh my God, or whatever.
You should, like Annie on the street. And then you go.
But it would be so interesting to just ask 10 or 12 people and like just find out, because I think that belief that there's normal people and then there's alcoholics, it was so pervasive. So not only did it make it that I didn't think it could happen to me, but it also made it so that when I started to question my drinking, I literally had an experience where a friend of mine who drank with me all the time stopped drinking with AA. And I said, oh my gosh, well, what about my drinking? I mean, I keep up with you. And she goes, no, I went and I learned that I was born this way, that I was born an alcoholic and you're not. And yeah. So that was about 6 years before I actually changed my relationship with alcohol. But in that one conversation, number one, I just accepted it as gospel truth because here's the authority. AA is the authority. They must know. I didn't question, well, how can you know? And what exactly does that mean? Obviously, I've asked all those questions in detail since, but at this point in time, didn't feel like there was an option for me.
Well, and that's like the green light, right? It's like, oh, right. Okay. This isn't anything to question. And like, right. Okay. That was definitely my story too, where it's like inside, like deep inside, I didn't know how or why or where or anything, but I knew I did not like my relationship with alcohol. I thought I just had to do it better, like drink in a more orderly fashion, like you with the water in between, and like then we're fine. And then you just assume that everyone else has it figured out. And you really gave me permission to say like, oh, hold on. I think this is all kind of just bullshit. I think that what we have grown up to believe, I think it's all a lie.
Yeah. And then when you start to pull the thread or take the red pill or go down the rabbit hole, it gets so deep so quickly. You know, I was actually speaking to someone yesterday who's super passionate about this conversation, and he's been going to attorneys to say, like, just like they did with cigarettes, you know, back in, I think it was like the 70s and 80s, he's been going to attorneys to really try to understand, what power do we have as humans, yes, against big alcohol, considering we've been so duped for so long, and considering there has just been such a big, like, overall cultural wool being pulled over our eyes. What's been fascinating is that the attorneys that he's spoken to, and so far he hasn't had any attorney that feels like they have a big enough kind of budget to take this on, but they think there's a huge case here. And they think part of the case is actually against, like, the FDA.
Mm.
Pure negligence, more or less, saying that we've known it was a carcinogen, like, causes cancer since 1988. Like, that's been public and then hidden.
And totally hidden. I was just talking right before this to an author who I love, and she was diagnosed with cancer, also did not connect any, didn't know any alcohol-related cancer, anything. And she posted in her stories, and she's like, I am blown away at the message I'm getting from women saying, wait, what? Like, I didn't know that it was connected to cancer. And then you'd go to the Susan G. Komen things on the breast cancer, on the bottles and all of that. Like, it is just absolutely insane.
Yeah. And it's so fascinating. I was actually another part of what I was writing, but I was doing this. I'd seen this great TikTok, and it was like a conversation between an alien and a human. And the conversation.
Oh my God, yes.
Have you seen this one?
Yes, yes.
Oh, so good. And so I was kind of expanding on it with, like, some more facts and stuff. And it was like, well, wait, so why do you do this? And we're like, well, you know, it makes you feel good for about 20 minutes, you know, kind of get a buzz. Well, but you drink for a lot longer than 20 minutes. Then what happens? Well, you never quite feel as good as that first drink. And actually, a lot of bad stuff starts to happen. But then your brain is pretty impaired that you can't really make a conscious decision about not having those next drinks. So then you just kind of say, F it. And then you wait till the next morning. And then you regret it. But then you do the whole thing again. And through this conversation, it was like, well, why? Like, why do you pay for this?
Right.
Why do you trade 20 minutes for the whole rest of your evening? And terrible next day. Why? And then it was like, well, because it's addictive. And then the alien's like, so why don't you just make it known that's addictive? And then people just avoid it.
Right. And, yeah, exactly.
And the human's like, well, that's kind of a typical human thing that we like to do, is we like to take a cultural narrative that we all have bought into hook, line, and sinker, and then not really question it because we just are in the soup.
Yes. And then you zoom out and you follow the money, right? And what gets me is always this, like, idea of, because, you know, this is the Sober Mom Life podcast. And so the idea that moms have needs and we have actual things that we need, but it's really hard to hear. They're really hard to meet. There's no room. There's no time. There's no space for our needs, right? And so then I imagine, like, you know, four guys in black suits and sunglasses, like Men in Black, and, like, sitting at our kitchen counter and just, like, pushing a drink and being like, shh, like, no, we don't have time for that. Like, I don't want to hear what you need. And P.S., you're going to get hooked, and that's good because we know you have needs, but this is going to make you not care about your needs, and now we're going to have your money. Yeah, it's like, it's a feminist issue too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the biggest ways that I noticed that, and I wish I could find the research on this that I had seen when I was researching this, but it was, like, buried in these archives of, there was an alcohol advertising sort of allegiance, mm-hmm. and they had kind of come together, and there was some documents that I found that were published that I've not since been able to find once I started talking about them, and I did not download them. Anyway, what they said was that women were an underserved audience when it came to alcohol marketing. And mm-hmm. this was probably circa, like, 2003, 2004. And if you notice, one of the things that started popping up everywhere were all sorts of brands. So brands, Mommy's Time Out, Cupcake Wine, like, just very targeted. We didn't even have these sorts of low-cal seltzer. Those didn't even exist before. So they were all part of this initiative to serve this underserved market of women. And then some of the more insidious things were sort of the t-shirts and the placards, right? That really
yes.
confirmed with our cognitive, we wonder if our drinking is okay. And then we feel guilty or we feel a lot of fear because we're like, well, if it's not, that means I'm an alcoholic. And then that question is so scary that all of these things started coming out saying like, no good story ever started with a salad. That's why there's wine. Or I drink everything that ends in D-A-Y. And then we put them up in our kitchens. And it was just like brainwashing ourselves by trying to feel better because we were feeling guilty. And those things would help us like feel a little bit like, oh, I can take it lightly. Everybody else is doing it. And
right.
Kind of snowballs.
And it totally snowballs. And, you know, I always talk about the influencer piece of it because I was an influencer for style and motherhood way before all of this sobriety stuff. And like, I was hired by Ketel One Botanicals, right? When they put like pretty flowers on the bottle and decided to feminize their product. And they paid me to, you know, sell it. I had a campaign for them. This is probably in 2016, maybe back in like the wild, wild west of influencing when morals were like, well, sure. Yeah. You want to pay me? That's great. Not the case anymore. But yeah, making it look glamorous, which is easy to do in a picture, right? And then I poured it down the sink because I just was never a vodka drinker. Like, that was never my thing. And like, you would never know I didn't drink that on a Saturday at 2 p.m. looking at those photos.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like I drank it. And so now you have the influencers and the supermodels and the I like to call them out. I won't, okay? I won't say names. Who are glamorizing this and normalizing not only drinking, but binge drinking, hiding your drinking in Stanley Cups. And the thing that I don't think just an average Instagram user realizes is that they are not doing that, right? Like, she's not drinking all day. She's not drinking tequila in the morning and like holding the orange juice. Like, they're not doing that, but their followers are.
Yeah.
And their followers are saying like, oh, good. Okay. This is okay. Like, she's doing it. It's the green light again.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the most important things that I noticed, you know, just piggybacking on the influencing campaign, like not only is it kind of the green light and then it gets us stuck, but I think the hopeful messages here are a few. Like, number one, women also get curious about their relationship with alcohol much quicker with much less resistance than I think men do. So I feel like we kind of go through the whole, from my experience, and this is not a study, this is just me watching humans.
That's okay. That's how we talk over here. I don't research. I have zero facts and I don't study anything.
My experience is that the length of time from when a woman really starts to drink in a way that's harming themselves or their, like, you know, their relationship with themselves, their relationship with their family, to the length of time they start to get curious about it is shorter. So like, we're just more willing to sort of say, yeah, this was a mistake, or I want to get better. But the other thing that I think is important to highlight, just looping back to the influencer conversation, is I then saw a really disturbing trend with sober influencers. I have a rule for anything that I put out on social media. And there's been a few times, I now have a team that helps me with it. But like, there's been a few times where we've broken this rule and I've like lost my mind. Everything we put out must not create additional shame.
Yes.
Not only for everything we put out not to create additional shame, but also for it to be something that if you were on your back porch, three glasses of Chardonnay in, already feeling guilty, and I was to walk up to you and say whatever was in my post, you wouldn't want to run away. And so what I started noticing was that a lot of sober, like, you know, you get those placards and you put a quote and it would be things like, a bottle of wine isn't a substitute for a good mom, or, you know, like, and it was just sort of these like newly sober people who were very proud of themselves and kind of had come all the way over, and the pendulum swung. And then I was like, oh,
now well-intentioned, but
yes, so well-intentioned.
Yes. I think the shame and the drinking in motherhood is an interesting conversation, because I'm always like, shame is, for me, I know, the most corrosive feeling that I could have. And it was one of the reasons why I kept drinking, right? Because it's really hard to feel. And so drinking helps not feel it until you do again. And then it's just this cycle, right? And so, I mean, first, if I could tell anybody listening, it's that you are strong enough to make eye contact with your shame. I promise you, it won't take you down. It won't. And it all starts there. I think even in like the posts that I post on social media, and I'm like, you know, if you're tired of seeing mommy wine culture reels and you want a space where moms have needs and we talk about our needs, like, you're welcome here, or welcome, or you found me, or something like that, right? Which in my mind, like, that's not me shaming. That's not, but I do find that there are some moms who are still, they're holding on to their drinking. They're not ready. They're not there, right? And I just showed up in their algorithm. And, you know, social media is interesting because we do feel like anything our eyes hit should be tailor-made for us.
Yes.
And if it's not, then we have to let them know. And so then there are some, there's shame conversations in the chat, in the comments, like, oh, well, I don't like spaces that shame moms for drinking. And I'm like, oh, it's just missing the whole point, right? I never shame moms who drink. I shame the moms, the brands, because they're not just mom, they're brands who convinced moms that alcohol is not only essential for motherhood, but makes it easier. That is the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's such a engine of that, right?
Yes.
And I was super complicit. I mean, in all the things I was complicit.
Oh, same.
In-
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're having a problem? Let me bring the wine.
Yes. Same. And until you're not, right?
Yeah.
And then when you're not, it is like, yeah, you've been brainwashed and you helped unbrainwash me. I always say, you guys, listen to This Naked Mind. First, buy it both. Buy it as a book and then also listen to it, because I really listened to it just going about my daily life, laundry, all of this stuff. And the way you do it, and part of it is repetitive by design to unbrainwash us. And that's what we need, because we are, when we're in it, like you said, it's like an engine. And when you're in it, like, you don't even know.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think like the most important thing is just to start to be curious. You know, if it wasn't that you were an alcoholic, because that's just not even medically and scientifically the case anymore. Those terms are not used by the medical and scientific community. So if it wasn't that, and if it was true that just because you're drinking a little too much, you're not broken, like there's nothing that's gone wrong here. In fact, your brain is doing literally exactly what it is programmed to do. And it's doing it very well and very efficiently. And so is your body. Even things like tolerance are your body protecting itself, right? So nothing has actually gone wrong here. And by the way, you were dropped into a society, and we are such social beings that your chances of not drinking, unless you were raised in some sort of extreme sort of religion or something,
yeah,
none. And so, like, look your shame in the eyes, but also recognize that, like, it is not personal. It's not, like, I just like to say, we've been doing the best we can with the tools we have. You know, it's been a cultural, like, brainwashing. And
yeah,
and we're just kind of waking up for it in this really beautiful way, supporting each other all along the way. But, like, yeah, nothing has really, you know, gone wrong with you personally. So just, all that was true, could you be curious about your drinking in a way that isn't shaming yourself?
Yes. I love that. And it's not a weakness in you, right? That alcohol did its alcohol thing, because it does that. I don't know science, guys, but I do know that science does its thing, okay? I want to talk about moderation. That's probably like my favorite topic. And I have to tell you, your saying that I have repeated almost probably in every Sober Mom Life Cafe meeting that we have is 99% is a bitch, 100% is a breeze. That saying changed how I thought about all of it. Tell me about that.
So the idea that 99% is a bitch and 100% is a breeze is, it's just so how I've experienced things. And it's so fascinating, because I wanted such an open, inclusive, you know, I didn't like the word recovery. I really was resistant to the word alcoholic. You know, I don't even call myself sober. And so I just say, you know, I drink as much as I want whenever I want. I just haven't wanted a drink in, you know, more than 9 years now. And that felt really good and true for me. So I really was so careful with language. And so I really wanted to be very open about like, yeah, you know, I have heard of a few, two people actually in my whole life, and I don't know how they're doing now, who had kind of successfully gone to moderation. And so I was like, I think it's possible. And I know that's the entry point for so many people. And so I like really want to be inclusive. But what I've realized for me is that trying to do something a little ways is retaining the belief that it still has a benefit. Yes. And that's what makes it so hard, is because if I want a little bit of alcohol, I still think a little bit is good, which means I think a lot of it is good.
And it's addictive. And so a little bit turns into a lot of it.
And one drink impairs your ability to say no to the next drink.
Right.
So you're just going to have a drink. So it like neurologically becomes really, really hard to just have a little bit of alcohol. So I have really not seen people be successful. And yet I think we all need to come in the door somewhere. And so it's so important to, you know, allow yourself to go through that. Like, maybe I'm going to be the one that can moderate successfully. But the problem, what makes it a bitch, is that you believe then there's still a benefit. And my work is really focused on trying to undo all those subconscious beliefs that allow you to believe that there's a benefit. Because when you don't believe there's any benefit, then it's 100%. Then you really just don't want it. And yeah, so it's kind of a both and, like, without rules, and moderation is nothing but rules, right? Nothing but rules, nothing but decisions. It's literally like being on a diet for alcohol. And
yeah,
you just can research for 2 minutes to know that every diet over time, like every human that's been on consistent diets, they gain more weight. They don't lose weight. Dieting does not make you lose weight. That's just the facts.
Yeah.
And so being on a diet for alcohol, like, from what I've seen, you drink more, not less over time.
Right. And the mental load, right? That is still the thing that I love about my sobriety, is that I don't think about alcohol. Like, that is where the freedom is. I am free. I'm alcohol free. I am free from it in all. I mean, do I talk about it? Sure. But that's because it's my job. If it wasn't my job, I wouldn't even give it a thought. Right. And so when there's moderation, yeah, it's, you're not getting the benefit of being free from it. And then you're also just fighting to keep alcohol in your life. And that's just exhausting.
Yeah, completely.
And your husband, okay, so this is the question that we get all of the time. This is probably at the top of the list, is I could probably quit drinking, or I want to quit drinking, but my husband still drinks. And like, what do I do? Because it's not a roommate, it's not a friend, it's a life partner, right? Like, my husband still drinks, although he just recently said, he was like, this was last week, he was like, I'm going a year without beer. And he normally just has like 2 beers on the golf course, like every other week or something. And, you know, for 4 years, he's been like, I'm right behind you. I am right behind you. And so now I'm like, okay, that's good. But when you stop drinking, your husband still drank, right?
Yeah.
How did you approach that?
So it was really a gift. So I know it doesn't sound like a gift, because it feels like, oh man, it would be so much easier if we did it together. And I think, you know, it might have been easier if we did it together, but the gift came in the struggle, because Brian came up to me and I was like, I'm going to be done drinking. And he literally said, he's like, don't expect me to change. And he's like, this is your thing. You're on this tear, you're on this tangent, you're doing all this research, you're talking about this all the time, and this is your thing, this is not my thing. And it was such a gift, because it was just super clear. And I was like, okay, all right, so if this is my thing, then it is my thing. And he was certainly supportive. You know, he wasn't trying to get me to drink, which I know some people definitely have that experience. But it was for sure, he was supportive. And then about, it was probably 3 years later. So a year after I stopped drinking, I self-published This Naked Mind. It was right around a year. And I was like, you have to read this, because I talk about like our life. I talk about our sex life. Like, it's just important for me that you read this. So he kind of read it in one day right before it published. And he's like, still, just so you know, it's your thing. I'm not changing. And then I'd say about 2 years after that, so maybe 3 years total, we just both one day noticed that he hadn't had a drink in kind of a while. And I had been the one buying him drinks or saying, oh, hey, I'll stop at the liquor store, because I just really wanted to normalize, like, this is mine, so I'm going to own that. And then he's like, yeah, I don't know when the last, we don't know when the last time he had a drink was, but I think it's been 5 or 6 years now. And so it was really interesting for him, just like kind of accidental.
Yeah, which is probably the best way to do it, right? There's no pressure. It's not you saying, yeah, you have to do this with me. And it just kind of happened in an organic way. You know, I do think about women who it feels like everyone in their life drinks, right? And they're like, how can I do this? My husband drinks, my friends drink, my family drinks. Like, we're all big drinkers. I have this ongoing joke in the podcast when people are like, they come on and they're like, well, you know, I'm from Florida. I know that people in Wisconsin think they drink. No, we really drink. Like, and every state says that. And I'm like, you guys know everyone drinks a lot. So, yeah, what advice would you have for her? Like, where to start?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's so true, first of all, that like literally every place, and I experienced that with every country that I was traveling to, because in my role, I was in charge of 28 countries, and it was like every country. It was like, you know, this, that. So anyway, what I would say, especially when you have somebody who you feel like everybody around you is drinking, I think there's a part of you that you can get in touch with what you really want for yourself. And there's a concept that I absolutely love, and it's called, and I'll do it in a quick nutshell, but it's called differentiation. And it was actually originally like coined by Carl Jung in, you know, when he was alive. And then Dr. Murray Bowen in the 1950s really expanded on it, this idea of differentiation of self. And what it means is that we really come to recognize and choose ourselves first from a place of being very connected with other people. So usually as human beings, we're swinging from being completely fused with other people, which means I do what you do. I like what you like. If we don't like, you know, I remember like with my girlfriends, like, oh, do you like her? Oh yeah. No, she's cool. Okay.
Yeah. You don't want to be different.
You don't want to be different. And then that feels uncomfortable because there's something inside you that actually is like, no, I'm really different. And so you move from that place of fusion, which there's a lot of anxiety in it because you're trying to stay the same as your social group, to a place of cutoff, which is, I think, what so many people feel like they need to do. And again, this is very pervasive in traditional recovery, like don't go to the bar, don't go to your old haunts, don't hang out with your drinking friends. And so we cut off, which is also a lot of anxiety. It's just a different brand of anxiety. We're very lonely. And so differentiation is in the middle of fusion and cutoff, and it's meaning you're fully self, but you're also fully connected. And so when I was thinking about like with Brian, like, how can I do that? Okay. He's told me who he is. He's being fully self. He's like, this is not me. So we're both fully self, but then how can we stay fully connected? So I would do that by stopping by the liquor store or offering to get him a drink or just making sure he knew that I was going to be fine no matter what. And I think the reason is because when you make a change, no matter how positive the change is, people around you take it personally, because they're either afraid of them losing you because you're going to go and be too good for them, or they're afraid of your judgment because you're going to think that, you know, that they're doing something wrong. And so,
or it highlights what they don't like, right? Like if they have that sticky feeling about alcohol, then it's that mirror to them. And alcohol's, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, then it's a mirror, and then they're looking at their own reflection, and then you become kind of like an inadvertent tool that they use to beat themselves up when they're around you. And so then they stop inviting you places. And when you recognize it, like, oh, all of those things have to do with them, not me. So then if I love them and I want to, like some relationships we don't want to really stay connected with, how can I just address those things? How can I normalize those things? So I've even had conversations when I first meet people and they're like, so we're all going to drink. Is that okay? And I'm like, let me tell you, for me, it's as if, you know, you were eating mayonnaise and I didn't like mayonnaise.
Right.
I have no emotional reaction to you drinking. Do you want me to buy you the drinks? I'm happy to do it. And they're like, oh, you're really cool. And I'm like, no, it's just like, I just need you to know that like, I'm here for this relationship regardless. And even at our company, like we don't need to hire people who aren't drinkers. That's not like a filter we have, because I'm like, it's a human. And then your behavior is kind of separate, and then, you know, allows you to live in that middle.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting, because I'm sure if you hire a drinker, by the time they're like, they work for you for a while, they're like, oh, wait, never mind. I don't want to drink anymore.
Everybody. Like,
right?
Everybody.
Yeah.
And so it's really funny because it's like, and there's a big joke about it. I remember my editor for This Naked Mind, 6 months after the book was published, she wrote me, she's like, just so you know, I haven't had a drink in 6 months.
Yeah, there's no way you can edit that book and not have it completely change your brain.
It was so funny. And then like in the company, they call themselves, they're like the accidental sober crew because
that's
they just
hilarious.
Started working here and just got brainwashed.
Yes, in the good way or unbrainwashed.
Unbrainwashed, exactly.
Yeah, that's great. What about your kids? Like, what is the conversation around alcohol with your kids?
Yeah, I really have been thinking a lot about the conversation with my kids because I have a 12-year-old, almost 13, and I have a 15-year-old, and then I have a 6-year-old. But it's just really open and really honest and very much owning that I used to drink way too much. I don't anymore. I'm much happier. And so not being afraid to talk about all of my mistakes. And, you know, my kids are curious. They're like, well, what did it taste like? Well, what about this? What about that? And I'm like, well, like, I'm sure you'll find out. But I don't also have like a lot of uptight anxiety around it either, because I really feel that, you know, in a lot of cases, when we have the proper education, then the kids are super smart. You know, there obviously is a lot of times where we overuse substances because of trauma. And that's a separate conversation than this. But with kids that don't have a lot of those, as far as I know, I hope my kids don't have a lot of traumas so far in their life. They just need the information. And so I actually wrote a kid's book called Buzz to Buzzkill, and I made them all read it.
That's amazing.
So it's fully illustrated. And it's just four little vignettes on things I wish I would have known before my first drink. And so it's just four like little scientific principles of, I wish I would have known this. And I've gotten such incredible feedback on it. Like people, you know, really, you just equip the kids. Because if you think about it from the alien perspective,
yes,
just be like, hey, like that thing isn't going to make you feel good for longer than 20 minutes. It's going to give you a terrible hangover. It's going to make you feel bad in the long term. It's completely addictive. It can destroy your life. It's very expensive. Like, and here's how it works on the brain. It's going to want it to make you think you like it because of the dopamine. And so I go into the science and they're just like, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Right. Like, why would anyone do that? Well, it's kind of, I've been thinking about, you know, like we learn to drive when we're 16 because we feel immortal and we like, there's no way I, as a 43-year-old woman, would for the first time drive a car, right? Like I would be terrified to death. Like I would just not do it. But when we're 16, 15, when we're learning, we're just like, oh, totally. What? Yeah, I'll do it. And it's, for me, it was the same with drinking. It's like, there's this immortality thing, this like kind of, yeah, thinking you're going to live forever, not caring, not really. But there's no way you put a glass of wine in front of me if I have never seen it at 43 years old. And you tell me what it is. Yeah, I'm not going to do that at 43.
Right. That just wouldn't make any sense.
No, it wouldn't make any sense. Okay, so we're going to wrap up. But first of all, your science mind like blows me away because it's just not how my mind works. Like I am very much like, yeah, soft skills, behavior, all that stuff. Were you always science minded, researching, like loving all of that stuff?
Yes, always. And it's not only just science. I would say science is actually of the things I'm curious about, what the science says is actually, and I know this sounds hard to believe, but it's actually a small portion.
Okay.
I'm so much more curious about the dynamics and what's really going on here. My favorite course in college was consumer behavior because it was like psychology of why humans do what they do. And it was my really first introduction to that. And so like, even with this naked mind, a lot of the research, like I had these theories and I remember putting these theories out to my editor based on how my life had been going and kind of like, I'd been researching like alcohol specifically, but a lot of the research about like how addiction worked and, you know, the harms of alcohol and none of that was in there because it was just, and she's like, I just don't believe you. You have to back all this up. And so I had to take the things that I kind of was intuitively understanding about my own life experience and then go and see like, are these things actually scientifically true? And they were, and that's super fun when you're like, oh my gosh, like, yes, there is a lot
you're
of
like,
research.
Oh, okay.
It totally makes sense. Like, but something like spontaneous sobriety,
right?
I researched that after that happened to me. It wasn't like I like looked it up. And then it was more like this happened. And then I was like, huh, I wonder if this happens to more people. And why did my dad have that experience? And then I was like, huh. And so it's really interesting. But so I would say less science and just more insatiable curiosity, like need to know.
Yes. Oh my God. Well, we are so lucky that you needed to know. And then that you taught us, because you changed the world. You changed my world. I can't thank you enough. Thank you for this. Thank you for everything. And we'll link everything. And we will eagerly await your second book, or your third, fourth, what? How many? I don't know. You have so many. When does it come out? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know yet. My rough draft is due July 1st. So,
okay.
It's going to be called Live Naked AF, which is alcohol free, and The Joyful Guide to Your First Year Sober.
Oh, I love that.
Probably your first year alcohol free.
Yes. Yes. You'll have to come back and talk about it. We'll do it in our book club. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Sober Mom Life. If you loved it, please rate and review it wherever you listen. 5 stars is amazing. Also, follow me on Instagram at The Sober Mom Life. Okay, I'll see you next week. I'm going to go reheat my coffee. Bye.
Oh, hey, it's Erin.
And I'm Michaela, and we're the hosts of the Two Sober Girls podcast, and we are on a mission to spill the wild truth about sobriety.
Forget the rosé all day cliche. Sobriety is flipping amazing.
Absolutely. It's not just about quitting the drink. It's a gift you give yourself and your loved ones.
So what are you waiting for? Break up with that old toxic relationship with alcohol and let us show you the possibilities.
And here's the thing. Everything your precious heart desires becomes way easier without the influence of alcohol.
We're not just two sober girls. We're also wellness coaches. We're here to show you how to optimize health, lifestyle, and beauty, feel sexy and alive as F.
So stay tuned, because we're rolling out new episodes every Monday wherever you get your podcasts. And trust us, they have your name written all over them. We can't wait to share the magic of sobriety and wellness with you. Subscribe to Two Sober Girls podcast today and come follow us on Instagram for behind the scenes action, and send us a DM. We can't wait to meet you.